Riding with Brennan is now proudly sponsored by Michigan Biker Law. Michigan Biker Law is the only law firm that exclusively represents motorcyclists. They're there to pick you up if you go down. Brennan and Michigan Biker Law hope you will enjoy this episode of Riding with Brennan, and we will see you on the road.
Hey guys,
Brendan, Riding with Brennan again. I just feel like I just did this a minute ago. So, but another special, super special guest from overseas. I'm here with Bruce from God Squad from down under Australia. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, good eye, Brendan. Hey, good eye, viewers.
Hey, I got to try some Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah, there it is. See, I always want to do that with a real Australian.
So, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming to visit. We had a good weekend riding around together. It's been great meet you, hanging out. I understand you come to the States fairly often for business stuff as a farmer.
Yes.
Which is funny because my podcast career started as a podcast about my farm.
Yeah, cool.
So, and evolved into the shit show you see before us.
So
you're from, tell us your name, where you're from, how long you've been in God Squad.
Okay, I live in the state of New South Wales. So that's where Sydney's the capital. I live down south of there. I'm a farmer and a machinery business dealer. I've got a machinery business. We're about 200 miles north of Melbourne.
Okay.
So Melbourne's sort of down south, so we're actually closer to Melbourne. I'm part of Northern Vic God Squad chapter. I'm just coming up 5 years as a member, so I've been hanging around with the whole God Squad thing for about 8 years. But I've been in the ministry of outreach to the 1% bike club for over 30 years, but only the last 8 years associated with God Squad.
Okay.
Even so, I've known God Squad from way back 30 years ago, and we did talk to God Squad 30 years ago about becoming members, but it was just a little bit difficult and different time in my life. So, been involved in ministry since I was in my 20s as a Christian ministry in the 1% scene.
Okay. So we talked with Queensland and Australia, right? The Pacific
Executive the PE is who we come under.
Okay.
And Mardo is our president of the PE. So that's Pacific Exec, so that's Australia and New Zealand.
New Zealand, I'm thinking Queensland.
Queensland's a state.
Yeah, I knew that. Not really, but all right, thanks.
Exactly.
My geography.
It's okay.
So
I get lost in America. You got way too many states
to
remember where they all are.
I've lived here my whole life and I can't name them all. So I can get you close.
Yeah.
So when you do farm, you do cattle, right? Correct? Your livestock, I guess.
We run nearly 400 Angus cows.
Okay.
We have an AI program and then we breed from them and sell them to the supermarkets or to the Japanese market. The grain-fed Japanese market or to other feedlots.
Okay.
And then we run Merino ewes that we, for wool and for meat, and we cross them over with a British bred ram, like a South Suffolk, and to have sort of first cross.
How many head of those?
We run a couple thousand of them, a couple thousand Merino ewes, yeah.
What kind of land do you have?
We're down south, so we're in like, for Australia, we're in the good country, like where it rains.
Okay.
so we run, by God's grace, we run 2,600 acres in two properties, one further in Victoria and one in New South Wales. But my family have been farming in that area for 158 years.
Very cool.
Yeah, 100. So we're old school farmers, and I love the land. I love farming.
Yeah, once it gets in you, man, it's work, but it's rewarding.
True.
And you do farm machinery.
Yeah, we run a machinery business. We've had that going for 22 years, and we import mainly, or nearly all at the moment, it's all US-built equipment. So we're the Australian distributor for five US manufacturers, and then we have an association with other US manufacturers, and it's all farming equipment, but it's for the big feedlots. It's the feedlotting. We ran a feedlot for 30 years, and it's mainly feedlotting equipment for the bigger corporates.
Okay.
Yeah. JBS and those big companies.
Good. So Carl and Paula, I gave them this hat already off camera. I was giving gifts out. So
good hat.
Like Michigan it. Bike Thank Life. You. Thank you guys for that.
Thank you.
How, I guess we started at the beginning, how'd you get into bikes? If you're living on a farm, I figured out
you're not on
the
answer. For me, it was always my happy place.
Yep.
We had motorcycles since we were little kids. My first bike was a GT80. So that was in the 70s, when there wasn't really mini bikes and there was no four-wheelers or three-wheelers, no such thing. So we had, I think Dad only made us buy it because then we could do a little stock work for him.
Sure. So,
but me and my brother bought that little bike, and my father used to do a lot of work. It was very work orientated. So for me, I could get on that motorbike with my dog and I could go out the back into the bush, and it was always my happy place.
Yeah.
So it's always been my happy place, and I've had motorbikes ever since then, but I couldn't tell you how many bikes, but into Harleys in my 20s.
Okay.
So I've been into the Harley scene since in my 20s. I mean, that first Harley was a big investment, but it was, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I love the bikes, yeah.
It's quite a step up. Like, I've ridden Kawasaki's and Suzuki's my whole life, and then this is my actually first Harley, and I can't believe I waited so long. It was, I'm like, man, if I only knew, right? I would have got involved a lot sooner. What do you feel led you to minister to the group that, you know, we minister, God Squad ministers to?
I suppose I started doing prison fellowship. I was a member of Prison Fellowship, which is the Chuck Colson American organization. And I did that in our local prison. And through that I met, you know, people in the scene and prisoners that were part of the bike scene. And I just wanted to do more ministry. I'm very ministry orientated, very mission orientated. And there was local clubs around me, so I just started turning up and building relationships. But, you know, that's over 30 years ago now. So, and those relationships are still in place in some of the clubs that I'm involved with.
So you're doing it right then?
I think so.
It's
full on, like it's really full on. And it does consume me up a bit. But I'm trying to get that balance between work life, family life, and the bike scene is a difficult one. And my priorities are my wife and my faith.
Sure.
My two sons, Trent and Sam, are very important. I have a great relationship with my two boys. Trent's married now, and he's got a wife, Amanda, and she's a lovely girl, and, you know, they're doing really good.
Good. Happy Father's Day, by the way.
I know. It's not Father's Day in Australia, but... Nope. Our Father's Day is a different date.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
You should get twice the gifts then if you're here.
Yeah, exactly, I'll get it twice. Better remind the boys that.
Yeah. Is it in Europe, Father's Day today?
Yeah, that's crazy. How come Australians are different? I don't know. But anyway, it is. We're different.
Okay, well, you're upside down because you're down under.
Exactly, we're upside down, so it'll be 6 months from now, I'd say.
Is it? Is it?
I don't know.
I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. So where do you fly? Let's see, like, what route would you... I know you stopped and we talked for, like, the other day. We were off in China and whatnot. But what route would they normally bring you? And I know it's, like, ungodly length of flow.
Yeah, because when I live, like, 400 miles from Sydney, so I got to catch a plane to my local airport to Sydney, and then I catch the plane. Normally it's to LA, and then you go from LA to the Midwest, Denver, or something like that is what I normally do. But the time you do all that and, you know, you're talking 25 to 30 hours.
Say a whole day at least.
Oh, more than that, yeah.
Wow.
It's a long trip. The main leg from Sydney to LA is about 14 and a half hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the biggest leg.
Man, I don't know if I could sit still in a tin can in the air that long.
It's exhausting, yeah.
Yeah, I bet, man. What do you think your greatest accomplishment is in God Squad? So thus far, we've talked about some pretty cool stuff that you've done, and I know you can't go into too much detail.
True. Yeah. No. I my greatest achievement. I don't. Yeah. I suppose just building new relationships. I'm all about the relationships within the club scene. I've continued to, just build on that and be purposeful with my ministry. I think I'm a fairly purposeful sort of guy, and just continuing to be there for them. You know, and keep turning up, keep showing them you love them, you know, trying to, we're lucky because I've got a farm, we'll get the local clubs to come and we'll do a big butcher up and we'll cut up a heap of meat and then we'll provide that for their Christmas party. So
that's fine.
So they all love it that we, we provided all the meat for there, and we do that for, you know, more than one club, you know. And,
yeah.
And that's that. They really enjoy that, and it's been a bit of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Out the farm, and we do the home butchering, and we do all these rolled roasts, and yeah, that's a bit of fun. But yeah, the relationships with the other God Squad guys is important to me too. I've got some very good friends in the scene, and I've ridden over Europe. And I've enjoyed their company, and they've come and stayed with me and ridden my bikes around Australia. And you know, there's some great relationships there, and great encouragement that we can be there for each other.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's a lonely life, you know, lonely ministry, because you are out of the, you know, in the scene, so you need to be able to be pulled back in and strengthened.
Yeah.
Because the bike scene pulls you out. And the God Squad members pulled you back in, and that's an important. I think that's with my church as well. I'm involved with my church. I'm a leader in our local church, and to me, that's an important part of it.
For sure,
you know, and you need that strengthening, and so you need to be connected with the church.
For sure. You've been 158 years farming land you're on.
Yep.
So it's a family affair. Your wife, kids, all involved.
My wife's Helen is involved with the business.
Okay.
She helps me. She's a great supporter. She's my number one fan, really, and my support. She gets a bit tired of the farming. She gets tired of the business part because it's just ongoing and relentless.
Yes.
You know, Helen's a great girl, and we met many years ago, and I've married 30 years this year, and we met through prison fellowship.
Okay.
What happened there is I was
in prison.
No, I wasn't in prison, but Helen wasn't either. But it's a good story. But we, you know, both Helen and I were both older before we got married. I was sort of 29 before I got married, and both of us had got to a point in our relationships that we were comfortable in our singleness, and both of us thought we were never going to get married, and we were both comfortable with that, and that was cool.
Yeah,
and that took us to, I suppose, for me, a bit longer on, but that was good. So I'm out doing my ministry. I'm involved with prison fellowship. And in there at the local prison, Helen had a friend who had got in trouble and ended up in prison, accidentally killed somebody, and he was an old school friend of hers. But she didn't want to go and visit him in prison. And a local church she was going to, there were some guys there that used to come into the local prison. So Helen approached them and said, "Look, I've got this friend of mine who's in prison. Could you go and say hello to him for me?" So they did that, and then she got in. She sort of thought that's pretty cool. And then we used to have a bake up where we'd do it at Christmas time.
Okay.
And people would come in and bake cookies, as you call them, and we'd give them to the prisoners and their families with presents and that. We'd give presents to the prisoners to give to their children.
Oh, okay.
So we would give them a present that would be sex and age
appropriate.
They'd give us their children's name, age, sex, and then we'd buy a present that then they could present that to the to their children at Christmas time.
Very
and then
cool.
We'd give them a little pack of cookies. So Helen had went and did cooking and doing that, and so she got onto the mailing list, and we had a conference in Melbourne. Helen was from Melbourne, and I went down to the conference because I'm, you know, that was just our get together from our little area and our prison with all the other guys that were doing it, and Helen come along for that conference, and we met each other there, and we started that relationship. But and all of a sudden it was like, oh God, I thought you said I wasn't going there and here, and both of us thought that, but we actually decided to get married at our third visit to each other. Third time we saw each other, we'd have said, you know, if you're not serious about this, then you know, why are we doing this? And I said, no, same, if you're not serious about it. And then we said, well, let's get married. So that was the third time we'd met.
So much for never getting married.
I know. And when they say, you know, you know, I thought that was a load of rubbish. But that actually is really, for me and Helen, it was true.
Right on.
We knew. But yeah, so so we thought, well, let's get married. So we did.
How long after that did you get married after that?
Just a year.
Okay.
Yeah. We thought we'd better not scare everybody and get married, and you know, the next week. So we decided we'd better plan it out and tell our parents and get that all done. And it was about a year later that we got married.
Yeah. How many kids?
We've got two boys, Trent and Sam. Trent's the oldest, and then Sam's younger. Sam's 24, turned 24 yesterday, and Trent's 27 this year.
See, both work on the farm?
No, Trent's Melbourne. He's a what I call a Collins Street accountant, which is a big business area in Melbourne.
Okay.
He works for a big American firm there in the accountancy, and Sam's at college, still at college, just finishing his degree in ag commerce.
Okay.
Agriculture commerce. So
he will at some point, or something related to ag anyway, right?
So. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, no, he's a good guy. He'll never starve. He knows how to work hard. They both know how to work hard. They've all worked hard on the farm.
Good.
Been part of that, and I think they enjoy that too. Yeah, but both of them, I think, especially Trent, I think they think there's a easy way to make a living than how Dad does it.
They're not wrong. Farming's hard work. Especially, I think, the livestock. I mean, not that the other stuff, cash crops aren't hard too, but the livestock, I think,
yeah,
definitely more emotional for sure.
Absolutely. It's a roller coaster of emotions, livestock. But yeah. It's very satisfying, you know. It's just a long-term thing. It's not a, you know, I think that's why the cropping program is different. You know, it's instant gratification with the cropping. You got the seeder, you're going along, look behind, the paddock's all brown.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you get the job done, end of the day, you can see what you've done. With livestock, you've got to join them, you've got to keep them alive, you got to, it's a two-year process, you know, so I think maybe that's why the younger generation aren't getting into livestock like the maybe. Cropping program. There's a lot more younger people in the cropping program, I think, than in the livestock, so.
Yeah.
But to me, it's pretty exciting. And it's, you know, you never hear any cropping farmers when they get to their retirement go, I'll be so glad when I get to the end there. I'm going to pull out that little 20-row combine and the old tractor, and I'm just going to be able to just put those few paddocks in while I'm retiring. Nobody says that, but lots of farmers say, yeah, I'm just going to downsize. I'm just going to keep breeding a few cows, and I'm going to really enjoy that part of it.
That's exactly my plan for my next place. The next time I move is going to be the last time I move, and I want to get a couple more cows and just...
Yeah, it's a good thing. And,
I want to travel first, though, because I didn't get to travel much with being the hobby farm. And then I have four dogs, and now I have my one senior dog. As soon as he crosses that rainbow bridge, boy, look out, world.
Yeah, there you go. I love my dogs. I've got a couple of great dogs, and they're good fun at the farm.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah, ours used to love the cows. They would love the cows, hated the fence.
We got a Kelpie.
Boy, did they hit the fence.
Yeah, we got a Kelpie, so it's the Australian livestock sheepdog cattle dog.
Yep.
But also got a little Jack Russell who thinks he's a Kelpie and who does the livestock work as well, and he thinks he's a sheepdog and cattle dog, even so he's only about this big.
Yeah, they are 10 times bigger than their body size and personality, man. This Jack Russell's, my brother has one. Cool dogs for sure.
Absolutely.
So I'll have dogs again, but I too many countries I want to see to find a dog sitter 100 times, you know. So Angus, and I'm assuming black Angus, no red.
No red. We just use standard black Angus. We do an AI program every year, so we join all our heifers and some of our cows, or do maybe 130 or 40 AI, and then cover bulls over that. We try to, you know, breed good cattle.
Sure.
You know, this year we use sex semen on the females so that we got all female calves.
Yeah.
Because that gives us longer, better in return on my investment for the program.
For sure.
So we're doing that, and I'm going to a bull sale this year in Nebraska. So I'm involved there, and that stud we're going to, there's a sale on next week. He's the bull that we use this year. So we're going to look at their cattle and look at their bulls and
that's
do
so
some
fun.
Choosing. And I love breeding. It's a really exciting thing to do.
It's a
long-term goal, but it's a really satisfying to know the bloodlines of your cattle and to follow them along and to continue to hopefully get them better, you know?
Yeah, it is. I had fancy cows, so we had all papers for ours, so we could check the pedigree back, and it was really cool to go and see the cows and be like, all right, I want some of that into my... How long does your herd health take when you run them through the chute? That's got to take a day.
Well, it varies compared to what we're doing. You know, there's lots of different... We run in American chutes, and we love that hydraulic cattle crush, or we call them crushers, or American chutes, as you the hydraulic chute. It's a great tool, and we sell them too. That's what we sell as
part
of our machinery. We sell American chutes. Yeah,
that's fun. I always liked herd health because I get to get my hands on some of the animals that are a little standoffish sometimes, you know, and you get to.
But we've bought a lot of crazy cattle out because we ran a feed yard there for 30 years and fed 100,000 cattle. And some of those cattle we used to get out west that were nice and cheap would just want to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and they would run out, they would jump out of your 5-6 foot yards and they would chase you around you know, they might have been cheap, but man, some of them were just crazy.
There's a reason you got them cheap.
They were crazy, but we made money out of them, and that was all we're trying to do was make money.
Absolutely.
So it's more about your purchase price when you trade cattle. We trade a lot of cattle, so that's the money making part of it.
Yeah, I did roofs for my buddy, shingled roofs, and they gave me a cow for it, and they gave me a Deacon Hereford, and I was like, I'll take it and raise it for beef, and it was a good time. What bike? What's your daily driver for your bike? What's in your stable
well,
for that?
I've got a really lovely bike. I got a '92 Sturgis Evo. Absolute original barn find sort of bike, you know, still as it come out of the factory, and I like that original, and I like that old school bikes. That's my favourite bike to ride. I've owned pans, and I own a couple of shovels, and I like that old school stuff. I've still got a Electroglide, which is my get on and ride bike.
Okay.
I have to just got to be there, and there's no mucking around, and I can't break down.
Yeah.
So that's always a good bike. So that's my long bike ride. You know, if I need to go to Sydney, 400 miles. You know, we'll do a lot of miles. Like, there's nothing for us to do 600 k's in a night.
Okay, wow.
You know, we'll do 600 k's. We'll ride 300 k's or clubhouse, and we'll turn around and ride home again. So we do a lot of k's. And
so last night was right up your alley.
We must have done nearly 500-600 last night. Yesterday.
For sure, and then you guys had to stop and load up a bike. And
yeah, guy broke down, so we were into fixing, helping people, and tried to help this young man get his bike going. He had trouble with his clutch and that, but eventually I said, mate, you need to ring your buddy, and we need to load this on the back of a pickup, because this ain't going.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
So then the deer incident, which me and Oops missed, I guess there was a big deer in the middle of the road, huh? And
yeah. No, so in Australia it was kangaroos.
I was just going to ask, because I know in Ireland, yeah. Corky had told me it was sheep.
Yeah.
Here it's deer. What is it in Europe?
Cats.
Yeah? I almost aim for those. No, I'm just kidding. Cats, yeah, I can see that, taking your front tire. And.
But yeah, kangaroos have a bad habit. We had our president, Glenn, hit a kangaroo just recently and come off. So he was okay.
Good.
But
the kangaroo?
No, the kangaroo wasn't so okay. But Glenn was, so that was a blessing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Poof, I can't imagine. This kangaroos are, they're sturdy, man. They're like, it might as well be a deer.
Oh, there's.
It's like a deer that hit the gym.
Exactly. Some of them are taller than me, and I'm 6 foot, you know, so.
Have you seen animals? You've probably seen the video online, and it's one of the funniest things. I tear up laughing when I see it. That kangaroo has that guy's dog, and he runs up and squares up the kangaroo and hits him with a jab, and the kangaroo's like.
I have seen that. It's pretty funny.
I can't.
They'll beat you up.
No
doubt about it. You corner a kangaroo, you know, they will. They will seriously beat you up.
Yeah, and I was just thinking the balls on that guy, man, to walk up and square up that kangaroo.
We all love our dogs, I suppose. So we don't want to see that dog, because they'll kill a dog without too much trouble.
Oh, yeah, for sure, I bet. Yeah. I
love drowning them.
Oh, yeah, I guess they would,
push
right?
Push them under the water and hold them down.
Yeah, it'd be easy for them.
I love doing that. It's their trick.
Yeah, wow. I didn't think about that. But I just remember seeing that video. I laughed so hard. I'm like, the guy's got some nuts on him, man, to go square up with that kangaroo. Actually hits him with a punch.
I know. It's not the sort of thing I would do, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I'm like
shoot. No.
But even in America, it's like, that would never cross our mind to square up with a deer or something. It's like, you know, so I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yes.
But how often do you come to the States, and have you hit, how many of the states have you hit since you're here quite often?
I think it's my 12th time here.
Okay.
It's mainly with our machinery business. We come over here and catch up with our manufacturers. But I always manage to do a bit of a ride, or in the winter I might have a bit of a ski. I like snow skiing. I love snow skiing. So that's always been a bit of a fun part thing to do with the family as well.
So that's something you wouldn't expect from an Australian, right?
Exactly, and there is snowfields near us, so I've always loved skiing. It's a getaway and escape from the farm, and and it's cool because Australia is so hot, and because I work on the farm, you're standing out in the heat for 6 months, so on my days off, I want to be cold. So
yes.
I've had a bad habit of just, you know, going skiing or going up in the mountains in the summer. You know, we had a condo up there years ago, and that was a lot of fun too, up in the snowfields. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But I snowboard, not ski so much, but I wouldn't expect you to snow ski. You water ski as well?
A little bit, but it's the same thing. You're out in the sun. So on my day off, I don't want to go and stand in the sun, you know. So it's so much better to, get cold for me, you know.
Yeah, so I guess a lot of people, I didn't even realize it until yesterday when I heard you talking about that there's snow in Australia in the mountains.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it's...
It's nothing like America or Europe, you know, but because we also ride horses, you know, we wear saddles out because we were pen riding our feed yards, so we would spend a lot of time on a horse.
Okay.
So we'd wear a saddle out, we would ride that much, and you'd have to rotate horses, and you're in the pens, being a pen rider, because I did my own pen riding in my feed yard. So, you know, but you're doing that in the summer and standing in that heat and sitting in that heat on the horse day after day after day. You don't want to do that in your day off. So, I did a lot of horse riding.
Yeah.
I mean, I love rodeos too. I love going to rodeos.
Heck yeah.
You know, I really enjoy the, especially the American rodeo scene. It's really good. I've done PBRs in America, and I love all that.
That's fun. And, yeah.
You know, I think that the rodeo PBR scene in America is exceptional, really, and
that's nuts too. Yeah.
Yeah, and what I really love about the PBRs and the rodeos here is the prayers before the rodeos.
Yep.
You know, there's some really amazing prayers that, it's real faith there, and we don't get that in Australia at our rodeos. You know.
No.
It's and it's a pity, really, because I think it's that recognition is. Really amazing, I think. You know.
Yeah, I would agree. To me, that seems odd because, like, I think we talked a little bit about is that the livestock kind of it brings you closer with God. I mean, there's a lot of God in what you do as a running livestock. You know what I mean? There's you see all him working every way and
livestock, dead stock. So you got the whole dead stock and is an emotional roller coaster. So you. You try to cope with that, and you try to make it better. And I really love my livestock, so I don't want them to die. So I'm always out there working hard to keep them alive and keep them healthy and all that sort of thing. So it's so when they do die, it's a bit
tragic. Personal.
Yeah, it is. It is personal.
Yeah.
And you know, but you want to be the best you can for them and do the best job. So it's hard work sometimes.
Yes,
it's really hard work.
You're lucky with that much property. You don't have to do much hay. I used to have to do hay.
Oh, we do a lot of hay.
Do you hay? Yeah, that's so miserable in the summer.
We do. You know, we do 1,000 tons of forage every year because our summers are very dry. So, your problem here for your farmers and your graziers during the winter where there's no feed. For us, it's the middle of summer.
So dry, nothing grows.
Nothing grows. It's like the moon. It's like the moon, you know. And we're in good country, so you've got to feed hay. You've got to make silage. We do pit silage and hay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I'm imagining you all round bale.
No, we do a lot of squares actually, more than you guys do. Maybe because we freight a fair bit, and the squares freight a lot better than the rounds. But we'll still do a lot of rounds as well, do a bit about 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, man, I would not want to stack your square bales if you're doing 50-50.
Yeah, we do a lot of square bales.
For somebody had square bales in my body, I was helping him out. His guy canceled. I think I was 42. He had the kick baler, you know, and he was being a smart guy. He decided to crank that speed up, so I caught one, and when I turned around, that thing was already there. Blew my hat off my head.
Yeah.
Oh, he still makes fun of me for it, but it was funny. I gotta give it to him.
We're not talking little squares, unfortunately. We're talking 8x4x3s.
Okay, we're talking...
Yeah, 8x4x3s. So 8 foot by 4 foot by 3 foot. So we used to do a lot of little squares. We do 14,000-15,000 little squares when I was a young boy.
That's the kind I'm talking about.
We don't do them anymore.
So do you have the big rig or the? It's almost like a boom, and it comes and pulls the square bales up and stacks them on
the stackers and that. Yeah. No, we just normally just go around stacking ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't got a stacker.
Get the loader tractor. And
yeah, we got a lot of loaders. Yeah.
Okay. Man, I should shut up because if I come there, he's gonna put me to work one of these days.
Exactly.
He's like, oh, so this guy can farm a little, huh?
Yeah.
So, it sounds like you own a ton of bikes. How many bikes do you own?
I don't know, six, I suppose. I might have six bikes, but it's by God's grace, really. But to me, they're a good investment, and I keep them well, and I look after them. They're all rideables. I don't have any bikes I don't ride.
Nice.
All my bikes are registered, and to me. You know, I don't want to just, if I'm going to leave them in the shed, I might as well have a poster, you know, so.
Yeah.
For me, it's a bit, they've got to be able to be righted, and I keep them all going, so that's a bit of a battle when you're running old shovels and pans and
yeah. What no if money's no object, what's your dream bike?
Honestly, that Evo that I've got, that Sturgis Evo, I've really wanted one of them for a long time.
So it's pretty awesome to have what you always wanted.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I when I was a young man in, you know, in that area in the early, you know, late 80s, early 90s when I was in the scene, to me that was the coolest bike. That was the, I thought it was the coolest Evo.
Yeah.
And so when I, when this friend of mine who brought it in from America rang me up and told me I had it, had one coming in, I said, just keep it for me and we'll have a good look. So it's a great bike.
A lot of people say that's the last good motor Harley made was the Evo.
Yeah, it was disappointing. I did crash it there when I first got it because we had a bad accident there last couple of years ago with our my good friend Baz Porter got killed.
I heard about that.
So my bike went down within that crash, and so that was a Baz was an amazing man who had a great mission heart, and he was a good fellow, and it was a very sad day. But and my bike got crashed up in that, so I've managed to put it back together, and it looks exactly the same. So yeah,
gave you a project for a little while, but yeah, rough. I heard about Baz, and that was when I first, I don't know how, started hanging out with him a little bit. It was fairly recent.
Yeah, it was fairly recent, yeah.
So
yeah.
So what would you, so I asked Nigel this, and I think it's a good question to ask most squad members. What advice would you give to someone that's kind of on the fence for missionary work? Like, they think they're being called, but they're not 100%.
I think they need to come and try. I think that's, I mean, I know the process of 3 years as a God squad is, it sounds like a long process, but it's a real come and try, I think it is, and that's what it's about. And there's no shame in that, that if you don't finish that, because, but because I personally, I think, you know, you need to be there for the mission. You know, it's not a social club.
Nope.
And it's never been, my opinion, you know, it's never been made as a social club. So, you know, we still have social events and we do stuff together as a chapter, and that's important. But it's about the mission. And I think you need to really feel that you are called to the mission. You know, because it, you know, it says very clearly that we are, you know, we're a mission club, and that's our goals. So that takes time to understand. You know, you need to really feel and get involved with your local chapters to see whether, you know, you really want the mission. You know, and it's an important part of God's squad, I think.
Yeah, maybe the most. Well, it is the most important part.
I think
right?
So. It's in our constitution, so it's a pretty clear.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your help this week, or the last couple of days, too. You were, you know, guiding us, whether you knew it or not, the associates, and all of us watched and learned from the patch guys all the time, and that's like we should be doing. So I appreciate your time and instruction on that.
No, it's great fun. I love America. I love coming here. It's always good people, and it's always a good time, and I'll be back again.
All right, man. I hope so. I hope to get to see you again. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
God bless.
You too.
Thanks. See you guys all next time. Ready? Catchphrase. I never walk this life till I take my last breath. I want to make a change. I got one life.